This is the Urban Political,
the podcast on urban theory, research, and activism.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. I'm the host, Maiz Jafari, and today my guests, Teresa Sprague and Ghazal Farjami, and I will talk about COVID-19 in an international context and its impact on the behavior of people in public spaces in Dortmund, San Francisco, and Isfahan. In our podcast, we will also discuss how people in these examples of collective and individual societies perceive and react to social distancing and masking measures in public spaces. And I mean with public spaces, city streets, parks, beaches, plazas, promenades, indoor spaces as well, such as shopping malls and restaurants. Finally, we will share our views from disciplinary and scholarly experiences on what the new normality in urban planning will be after COVID-19 and how it's going to change if things didn't improve. So we will start with a short introduction about you, Tess and Ghazal. Can you please give us some information about your background and current work?
Thank you, Maiz. So I work as a scientist and planner within a private consulting firm called Brown & Caldwell. I'm based in San Francisco, California. And a lot of the work I do is engaging in projects with private and public agencies. So many of those are cities and regional departments, various entities. And the work spans really across the U.S., so in various states, quite a lot in California. And the majority of these projects are water-related or environmentally focused. For myself, my background and expertise is in risk, resilience, and climate change adaptation. Also worked for a number of years outside the U.S. and especially across the EU. I completed my MSc at the University of Oxford and PhD through an EU Marie Curie fellowship at TU Dortmund. And I continue to write and teach as a guest lecturer at TU Dortmund on topics at the intersection of water and planning. And I'm just in general looking forward to our discussion today and appreciate you having me.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ghazal Farjami. I'm working as a head of Department of Interior Architecture in DHEI University as an assistant professor in Isfahan, Iran. I'm also assigned as a member of Research and Technology Center dealing with different international projects. We're collaborating with MACE as head of research group in DIADE, founded project about climate change challenges between TU Dortmund and DHEI University. Dealing with research projects beside teaching experiences resulted in several papers published in my field of studies such as theory of architecture, tectonics, and both contemporary and traditional Iranian architecture. And I hope that we're going to have a fruitful conversation.
Thank you for introducing yourself. I'll also share some information about my background. I currently work part-time at the TU Dortmund University Faculty of Spatial Planning as a project coordinator of a DIADE research project about challenges of climate change in Germany and Iran. I collaborate with Ghazal on that project. I also work part-time at the City of Dortmund Department of Urban Renewal as a coordinator of an international research project funded by the European Horizon 2020 program. And it's about nature-based solutions and the green infrastructure in post-industrial cities. The project consortium consists of over 34 partners from 7 European cities and a Chinese partner city. And on that project, we collaborate at different levels, at the co-design, co-implementation, and the research level, of course, of creating nature-based solutions within what we call living labs in urban areas of these cities. Some information about my educational background. I finished my PhD at the TU Dortmund University and master's and bachelor's degree at the University of Jordan. Most of my research and teaching experience center on intercultural dialogue projects, collaborating with universities from the Middle East and the Gulf region. In my work, I also focus on co-producing and co-design of public space in metropolitan areas. Climate change and transformation of post-industrial polycentric cities. I also do lecturing at universities. So we know that restrictions on social interactions and the use of public space, as well as physical distancing, were key measures to reduce the transmission of COVID-19. And as a result, public space has witnessed significant challenges in the recent months. So how people use the city of San Francisco and Isfahan during COVID-19? Perhaps we can start with you, Ghazal, since you have a different experience and a different context than the European and North American ones. So what social or cultural changes have you seen in public spaces of Isfahan during COVID-19 outbreak?
Yes, as you may experience, Iran has an introverted society, which is based on governmental policies. So before COVID-19 also, people were not allowed to gather in public spaces. So they mostly have their own gatherings in small groups, mostly in private spaces, such as their own houses. So COVID-19 has resulted in intensifying this introversion. So in case of urban public spaces, such as Riverside and parks, people are using them the same as before and mostly without using masks, let's say, and they have picnics there. So there, because there is a river passing through the city that I'm living in Isfahan, as the one of the main axes, and there are parks and green areas alongside the river, and so they're full of people. But in the beginning of this phenomenon, in March, for a month, the municipality turned the lightings off and no one were allowed to use these pots. But now people are using them as before. While in offices or universities or other official public spaces, there are much more restricted rules which should be considered, and people have to, for instance, wear masks mostly.
What about the situation in San Francisco, Tess? What changes do you see in the city?
So we've seen a few changes in the use of public spaces, particularly increased accessibility for pedestrians and restaurant goers. So for example, any businesses who have the ability have been able to make use of what was previously parking spaces outside their establishments. So what you'll see are a lot of pop-up dining areas that are now being constructed right outside the restaurant, so people can sit there and have that for dining. As of right now in the state of California, all indoor restaurant activity is not allowed. So that's one way that you'll see a change in some of that space use, which is really quite a change from before. And there's a question of, you know, will that be longstanding, you know, even after the pandemic? The parks and generally green spaces is another interesting factor for consideration in terms of just the use of a public space. So what we see now is that these areas are still very regularly used. At the very beginning of the pandemic, there's actually, let's say, too much use. So there were hiking trails that had so many people on them that they were actually closed because there was no way for people to socially distance on these hiking trails. So that was kind of interesting, just to see that actually they had to close quite a bit of the state or county or city owned trails and some park areas because there was too much traffic, foot traffic for pedestrians. So that was kind of interesting. Now that's a bit less. You're still supposed to be wearing masks if you're using those spaces. And depending on the space, for example, certain parks like Dolores Park, we have circles on the ground in the grass that, painted circles where it really is a very, very obvious visual of where people can sit and how should they sort of congregate in the park to be able to socially distance. And then we've got individuals like park rangers walking around reminding people to wear masks and providing masks to those who don't have them. So people are still using these spaces. There's some changes in the use and sort of what that looks like. But in general, that's still something that's going on. Another example is closing down of streets so that it's only used for pedestrians. And you've got some folks like volunteers in vests monitoring the situation in these areas. So that's been kind of an interesting change to what we've seen before. And then there are a lot of signs, a lot of public noticing in these public spaces to alert people and educate people on what they should be doing. One thing to note is that there are some areas in the city, when you think about neighborhoods and sort of the needs of the people using these spaces, you know, some areas have been impacted by COVID-19 more substantially than others. And one neighborhood is the Tenderloin, which is in kind of the heart of the city. There's a substantial homelessness population, many people who are unsheltered, who are at heightened risk of infection and lower access to healthcare services. So one of the other, I would say, social changes that we can observe is in the policy and sort of general planning for people living in some of these areas. So for example, there's a specific neighborhood safety plan for that particular neighborhood, and a lot of efforts that have been increased by the city to provide basic services to this area and also to others. One positive thing is that there's just generally less traffic overall. So that'll be interesting to see kind of the return to that or not, but that's been kind of an impact on the use of space and also the use of changing, the impact of changing spaces to be more pedestrian friendly.
Mm-hmm. The part you mentioned is about the expanded outdoor dining area of restaurants in San Francisco. It's something we also have in Germany. So in Dortmund, the parking lots of many restaurants are also used to serve diners, especially that restaurants are working at half capacity after the lockdown period, and they need more space to maintain social distancing measures. This seems to be a practical solution, however, not for the long term. So the weather in California is relatively moderate year long, but in Dortmund, the weather is warm for a few months. And after that, outdoor parking spaces cannot be used for dining purposes. So we will see how this will be in winter. Another observation is the increased use of public spaces and parks during the outbreak. So especially that several popular city parks in Dortmund, such as Westfalen Park, were closed and outdoor activities were limited during the lockdown period in second half of March and first half of April. And during these times, people were literally not allowed to meet in groups. And I mean with that, people more than two people, unless they were family members or people living within the same household. What is also interesting is to have a broader look and to see how different countries are dealing with this pandemic when it comes, at the social interaction and access to public space. So although many countries and European countries and other countries around the world, I know by fact, for example, that in Jordan and Dubai, that they followed similar approaches of closure of parks and other public facilities like schools and daycares. However, we see that other countries like Sweden or Denmark, in Denmark as well documented in Gail's work, Public Space and Public Life during COVID-19, they took a different approach to the pandemic, and they dealt with it on basis of trust and civic responsibility. And I think this is a better approach because it does not limit the right of individuals to access and use public space, as public space is a very important and essential part of creating solidarity, social solidarity, especially during these difficult times, and allowing physical activities and social interaction. So this is the best place actually to offer social interaction at a distance. What was also noticeable in the first few weeks of the pandemic is the absence of risky groups, and I mean older people, in most of the popular spaces in Dortmund, especially in the weekend market. But this has changed after the lockdown period in April and afterwards, especially after the enforcement of wearing masks. And wearing masks is a whole topic itself. it's not part of the culture in Dortmund nor in Germany to wear masks. So it was really difficult at the beginning to commit to wearing masks. And now it's getting, let's say, part of the culture or the new norm for the short term. And there is even a kind of social responsibility and social management towards wearing masks. So people wear masks now, and we see it's accepted now. And wearing masks on buses, trains, and when shopping, like indoor spaces, has been mandatory in Nordrhein-Westphalia since April 27, and in most German states as well. And all people over the age of 60 years should wear a mask or cloth face coverage. And we see that we have different types of masks in Dortmund. The most common ones are the surgical disposable masks. I use them myself. They're like light, you don't have to wash them, and affordable, you find them everywhere. So there are advantages about them. Although they are loose fitting and they provide little protection against very like small particles from the from coughs and sneezes. Yeah, and I think most people are wearing these masks. A considerable number of people wear N95 masks, and they're professional masks, and they're protected from tiny droplets that remain suspended in the air. I think like more careful people prefer to use these masks. What is also getting more and more popular is a cloth masking. We're starting even to see that many people are making their own masks. It looks good as well. A less common type is the face shield, which is used only in retail buildings and department stores. And I think typically it should be worn in addition to clothes or to mouth masking. But the ones using this type of mask are using it because it provides like space where you can breathe easily. And it's better than the mouth masking, the typical ones, in that sense, since they're working for many hours. So what about the situation in San Francisco and Isfahan? As you mentioned, that public spaces and the banks of the Zayenderud River are not intensely used in the pandemic times. What about the indoor spaces, Grand Bazaar and shopping malls? And do people wear masks in Isfahan? So what is your experience on that?
Since it's not compulsory here, it is mostly based on individual awareness. So it seems that some people still do not believe that COVID-19 exists, and some other are afraid and that it's serious. So we can see different kind of reactions to the situation. Maybe some people also, they do not spend money for buying masks. Even you can see some people are wearing them, but put them down when they want to talk, which is also related to their awareness about the benefits and how they have to use and why they're using these masks. As I've mentioned, it is mostly related to individual awareness, and so it has resulted in self-organized movements. So I saw some students at university who were drawing masks for recycled bins in the street, which was a very interesting, impressive movement. Also in some streets some days before, I saw children standing in front of the cars, stop them and ask them to wear their masks. So it can be said that COVID-19 brought more social activism among people. We can see also some people started to disinfect the streets and work in hospitals voluntarily. Another thing is that nowadays masks become a part of clothes, and fashion designers are producing different models of them, which may encourage them using masks. But in general, if I want to say, it's not still a part of culture, and I think it needs time.
Okay, so it is not like there is no fine for not wearing a mask in public spaces in Isfahan.
No, there is no punishment, there is no fines in the whole country, so it is totally depend on people's awareness, and if they they believe that there is something happening and they have to wear them to protect the others and themselves as well, otherwise they're not wearing them.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the case in Dortmund as well. Besides that, of course, everything in Germany is regulated. And although there is like high sense of awareness in Dortmund of wearing masks, but of course, this is enforced by regulations. And recently, it's even mandatory to wear masks in a school. So students, they have to wear masks now until end of August, until they see if this is efficient, especially for pupils, which is like it's not easy to keep them or to force them, let's say, to wear masks like for, I don't know, 6 or 8 hours. And this will be let's say monitored until end of August to see if it's an efficient let's say measure. And I know that there is a fine for not wearing a mask. There is 150 euros that should be paid. Although, as you mentioned, Ghazal, like it's up to people what they think about it and the way they like their sense of collective responsibility. Of course, besides the regulatory part of having a fine, there is a kind of like, let's say, social punishment. If you don't wear a mask, people will look at you like, well, why don't you obey the regulation or just do that what most people are doing? So this is it all can be seen in the public arena in Dortmund. How is the situation test in San Francisco? So we know that like with the Black Lives Matter protest, we all heard about it, and of course the gathering in masses, and now the presidential election just about to come. So how is the situation, and what's your observation about the wearing masks, and how strictly is the enforcement of social distancing rules followed?
So I think, first off, wearing a mask is not particularly part of the culture inherent in San Francisco or really generally in the U.S. As compared to other places around the globe. However, it is mandated at the state level in California from the office of the governor. So there is a requirement now. And in terms of fines, it's interesting. It kind of depends, not kind of, it really depends on the county. So we've got, the state level and regional and county levels and city levels here. And depending on the county, you can have no fines or you can have quite substantial fines for being cited not wearing a mask. So, for example, in Marin County, which is just above, above the city of San Francisco, north of here, fines can vary between maybe $25 to $500 at the individual level. And then there are also fines for businesses. So that can be anything, maybe 250 to, 10,000 or more, depending, on the business and infraction. But so that's quite a wide range. But there are fines depending on the county, and implementation and enforcement also kind of varies widely depending on local implementation. What's interesting is particularly with the protests and different kinds of gatherings, whether that's for a political, whether it's a rally or some kind of a campaign, event, you'll see that just to kind of at a higher level, there are many events that have been canceled. Anything that is a mass gathering, for example, at least in the state of California, has been, you're really not supposed to have those. That even goes down to the level of congregations for different religious groups. So for example, for churches and larger churches, that's also been included in the list of, not having in-person gatherings. And so you'll see a lot of virtual options for that. In terms of how that works at in practice, there are still some establishments or some congregations, let's say, that are meeting outside and trying to social distance. So there are definitely examples of where the in practice following or not following varies. And there's some arguments about, is it lawful for that to be prohibited? In terms of protests, having participated in several of the Black Lives Matter protests in the city of San Francisco, I would say just from my own observation that there were quite a few people wearing masks. It is awfully difficult to social distance in a protest. So I think that's, maybe not something that happens as easily. However, just in my own experience and having participated in some of those protests, there are quite a number of people wearing masks, and that was pretty easily observable across the majority of the participants. So one thing that is kind of interesting in terms of what people are doing in public spaces and how they are wearing masks or not, you'll see even for those individuals who are engaging in outdoor exercise, you'll see bandanas or snoods or some kind of face covering often worn by individuals who are exercising outside even. I will say from personal experience, trying to go uphill with a cloth mask is not ideal. But if you can get 30 feet or so away from other people, it's socially acceptable to have that, your mask down and put it back up if you get closer to people. But there is what you had said about, and I think social shaming is maybe a bit too harsh of a word, but in that direction, in terms of the kind of social pressure to make sure you are covered if you're in a group of people, there is a sense of that to a certain extent. And you typically see the majority of people walking down the street wearing a mask. And the variety of what you see that qualifies as a mask is a pretty wide range. It's interesting about the comment and that Gaza gave about sort of the fashion part of this. You'll see people have been pretty creative in creating their own masks. Some of them are a bit bedazzled with, all sorts of things on the mask. As long as they're, cloth and covered, that they count. But there's quite a wide range. Not as much with the face shields. We don't see quite as many of those, but definitely a lot of cloth masks. I would say also that there's an incentive to, not just because it's required, but there's an incentive to wear them because it's, not having a mask becomes a barrier for entry for most establishments. That includes grocery stores, any kind of essential services, any business that's open right now. You are required to have a mask when you go inside and try to maintain some social distancing.
So how is the situation in Isfahan, Ghazal, and how strictly is the enforcement of social distancing rules?
As you might be familiar with the situation, mace in Iranian culture, the same as some other Eastern countries, people used to shake hands, hug or kiss when they meet each other, which is decreased a lot. Although it was difficult in the beginning, but people learned to quit these kind of habits, and so far as now, they hesitate doing that. So I can say that it's mostly, eliminated from the culture. Also, there are so many religious gatherings according to the society and governmental policies, that one of which as the most famous religious gathering is quite close, called Ashura, and they're announcing that they will hold this gathering with some protocols, such as keeping 2 meters of distance among participants, but no one knows that what will happen after this. So, it's not possible to consider this everywhere. but especially the ones who are wearing masks, they mostly are thinking that the masks will protect them and they do not need to keep distance. But, you know, it might be difficult to say it in general, but I'm talking about my own observations that masks are much more popular than social distancing in Isfahan now.
Yeah, it is. What you mentioned about the greeting, we see this as well in Dortmund and I think all over the world, that we see like people, they're avoiding now handshakes. This is the same case in Dortmund, but people don't greet like this anymore, or hugs. And it's interesting to see that now there are different practices to greet, like eye contact, they emphasize on eye contact more, or with elbow bumping. And this is unusual greeting form, at least in Dortmund, and we see people are using this nowadays, and it's funny and socially acceptable as well, even in formal settings, let's say. It's difficult to anticipate, especially with the continuous increased numbers, and sometimes it increases, sometimes decreases, and so it's really difficult to anticipate for how long the COVID-19 will continue. But what do you think, Ghazal and Tess, what are the major shifts in cities will be after the pandemic, and socially speaking, but of course, feel free to mention the other aspects. So what are the key takeaways from experiencing this pandemic? Maybe we can start with you, Tess.
Sure. So there's, I think, a few things that we can consider, and a lot of uncertainty in terms of whether or not certain changes that we've observed during the pandemic, whether or not those are going to continue as we see, you know, restrictions lessen, as we see changes going forward. So, for example, in San Francisco, you know, this is a very expensive place to live. It surpassed New York City in terms of cost of living, and being one of the most expensive cities in the U.S. at least to live in, either rent or own a home. What's been interesting with the pandemic is that a lot of people are now being encouraged to or required to work from home. So that virtual setting is definitely a shift for some people, and actually quite a lot of there's a bit of a shift in mindset of, well, you know, if I have to work from home and I'm going to be virtual, I don't have this commute anymore. I don't necessarily need to keep living in a place where I need to pay this much for my rent for all aspects of cost of living. And particularly when the city itself has substantially reduced economic activity. So there are parts of the city that are very much like ghost towns, because there are businesses, especially non-essential businesses, that have been shut down and have not reopened yet. And it's uncertain exactly when those are going to be reopened. So even the types of activities you can do in the city have really dramatically changed. And so there are many people who have started leaving the city. And there are enough people that have started leaving the city that even the cost of rent in some places, you'll see, you know, rent is starting to, the asking price for places is starting to decrease. And that has been unheard of for, I can't remember the last time where I'd have to look that up. Historically, when rent prices have actually decreased from year to year in San Francisco as opposed to increase. So that's a big change. And depending on, I think, the sort of demographic shifts within, you know, the city, we may continue to see that change. And, you know, shifting the demographic of the city definitely changes, you know, the people who are using that space, also the way we maybe view and plan for use of that space. So one other thing to think about is, in the future, the concept of making space for people, having more pedestrian friendly environments, is something that I think folks who are still living in the city would like to see a continuation of. So that kind of planning, that kind of use of open space and public space, and seeing a continuation and encouragement of that over time. You know, the city had a few various projects, and particularly, you know, some sort of nature-based solution type projects that sort of encouraged that direction. And I think you're going to see a continued push to have more of those kinds of projects, depending on what can be funded. And the funding and the economic impacts are a whole nother topic that we could spend an entire podcast talking about. But the short version is, you know, when you think about a city and city planning and planning for those spaces, you know, where does the budget come from for that? And if you have a change in, even for the utilities, for example, a change in ratepayer base where you have people who either can't afford, they've lost their jobs due to COVID, they, you know, are worried about being evicted. And actually, as a side note, as of right now, there's an eviction moratorium. So during COVID, no one can be, you know, removed from their homes due to you know, inability to pay. But the same goes, it holds true for utilities. So there's a prohibition on shutoffs for water and power within the state of California. And what's interesting is if you think about, you know, what funds being able to make changes and improve some of these spaces, well, over time, it'll be interesting to see what's the impact and the lasting impact of a change in revenue for the city. And based on, you know, are they collecting that same amount of revenue or not? So that'll be interesting to kind of see over time. The last thing, and kind of a positive thing to maybe as a last item I'd add, is just that there seems to be an enhanced appreciation for the environment, for the accessibility to be outdoors. And in general, there's been, because of less traffic, there has been a bit less pollution, and that's something that's been a positive observation. But having people really have this, enhanced sense of appreciation for being able to have that open space and outdoor activity has been a change that I think we'll continue to see.
So Ghazal, what do you think about the major shift in Isfahan will be in the future or after the pandemic?
Although it's as you mentioned, it's difficult to anticipate that and it's too early. But I think from what we're experiencing now, we can have some viewpoints that will happen in future. So I think cities have to find a solution other than current time. So what I can see that's happening in the city is that the safety measures has decreased a lot because of the economic situation, and by arrival of COVID-19, it even get worse. Another thing that can be seen is about the home offices, that it's not just about Iran or Isfahan. It's happening in the whole world that home offices are getting more popular. While here we have, we do not have that much proper infrastructures, which are trying to get them better. And people are using cyber spaces more than before, so they can, in order to have their voices more than the real world, they're using cyber spaces and communicating in virtual spaces. But if I want to talk about my own career, when we're teaching in cyberspaces and online courses, and students are doing their projects in the same way, now what I feel is that they're losing their creativity because they're consuming ideas from internet more than before, and we're, you know, losing lessons, so they're not producing any new ideas anymore. And according to my field of study in architecture, what I can see is that we have to consider much more comprehensive design for our houses than before, because people will spend much more time at home, and these kind of houses has to be multifunctional, that people can use them for different kind of activities, that they didn't use before. So maybe public spaces using them might decrease, or the way that we're designing them has to be changed, and we have to consider much more, proper solutions in having houses in which people can feel not only safe, but also they can spend time I think they have to spend effective time at their homes because they start working in these kind of spaces from COVID-19. This is what I think that will happen in our cities.
I share many of your reflections, Ghazal, because there are indeed positive sides and advantages about COVID-19. Just as you mentioned, Ghazal, the virtual space has allowed many people to interact and join events from overseas. This offers a flexibility, of course, and saves travel time. But this will not be a replacement of the physical space where active interaction is taking place. I'll also share some of my reflections on major shifts in cities, especially in Dortmund. So at the level of human activity, the current safety practice of 1.5 meter distancing, facial coverage, and repeated hand washing will continue in the short term, and people will avoid using shared facilities in the city spaces. At the other end, I think pandemics throughout history, such as Black Death, influenza, Spanish flu, and other pandemics, have not changed much in the way people interact and socialize in a space. So people will still meet, hug, greet the way they did before, and sit outside in restaurants. It seems unlikely that that space will change much after COVID-19. What is also interesting to notice or to observe is the psychological part of experiencing this pandemic and the shift in people's attitude. So people, by and large, were paranoid of getting sick of COVID-19 and self-quarantine and isolated themselves. Yet the longer the risk of this pandemic lasted, the more people accepted and embraced uncertainty. And this has manifested itself in the case of Dortmund and in many other cities in the increased use of public spaces and parks, despite the excessive amount of information about this pandemic. And I actually think that the more people have information about this, about COVID-19, the less they care. So people want to just move on with their life and travel, just live it as the way they had it before. And I think this is a healthy development, as it leads to a psychological robustness, or even beyond that, as Nassim Taleb describes in his book, Antifragility. So the state of antifragility that people reach or in the process of reaching is more than resistance or robustness or resilience, as being resilient, for example, means to face shocks and to remain the same as before. While anti-fragility mechanisms imply becoming better and stronger. And this has in return an impact on people's idea about uncertainty and becoming comfortable with the unknown, despite like the natural tendency of preferring predictability and stability. So it has this psychological impact. There are lessons learned for planners as well. So planning typically inhibits risk-taking and find solutions for everything. So I think we with the planning now, we should like leave space for uncertainty or for the unpredictable events. So this is a big lesson in this pandemic. I see that many private companies will allow or even encourage home office, and this will have implication on city planning. which have so far been designed to separate work from leisure and living. So the interrelation between inside, outside, public, private has to be restudied. The online commerce will increase and thus demand in restaurants and retail stores will be reduced. So planners should consider in this relation how to keep the city center alive and how to use the front area of the restaurant, especially the closed restaurant. And finally, at the environmental level, I think that appreciation of nature and the green infrastructure has increased, as well as using bicycles as an alternative to private cars and public transportation. And cities will implement more nature-based projects that focuses on nature and improving the quality of life. And in the Department of Urban Renewal, there are many new projects such as the International Garden Exhibition, IGA 2027, and the ProGeric, the European research project, European Commission research project I'm working on, which are focusing on implementing measures that strengthen connection to nature, especially in the northern part of Dortmund, where the post-industrial part, where many low-income groups are living. One last comment I just remembered. I think there are new typologies, or let's say typologies of public space that didn't gain much attention, then now they're emerging and now they're gaining more attention. And particularly the small gardens or allotment gardens or community gardens, or the way it's called in Germany, Schrebergarten, which is a special type of garden that was developed in the late 19th century. It was basically conceived for guest workers after World War II to compensate or to offer them the quality of farming and countryside they had in their home country. And now we're seeing more like younger generation, they're attracted to this kind of gardens, and it will increase as well the interest in these gardens. At the end of our episode, I would like to ask you what brings you joy nowadays. So maybe we can start with you, Tess.
Sure. I think just in general, and I think we've kind of touched on some of this throughout our conversation, but examples of people coming together. Everyone is vulnerable at this time, whether you're a vulnerable group or not. And just being able to see examples of solidarity has been really uplifting. So for example, a very specific example, at least in the city of San Francisco, are the murals that have popped up throughout the city that have been painted on the boarded windows of businesses who have closed. And a lot of the messages that you'll see are messages of, you know, either anti-racism or solidarity, or you know, just in general, you know, protecting each other and being safe as a community. So that's really been a very positive thing to see. And I think we'll start to continue to see more of that, you know, people trying to have a common cause and think of something beyond yourself as a good source of inspiration right now.
What about you, Ghazan?
Other phenomena in the life, it has also both positive and negative effects on our lives. But if I want to think about the positive sides, I can mention that, you know, I have more time for myself to spend on things that I like, because I'm staying home more. So I'm dealing with more works at the same time. And so accordingly, I use my time more efficiently. And as I mentioned about designing multifunctional spaces of houses, I myself also become multifunctional as well, and I can do more than one work at the same time. So, and you know, I'm trying to use to this new situation and spending much more time for myself. And this is the good point that comes into my mind now.
I agree with what you mentioned. Actually, there are good things that COVID-19 has brought. I appreciate the slower pace of life it has caused, especially at the beginning of the lockdown period when we needed more time to adjust. I also appreciate, particularly appreciate, the community spirit and the solidarity we're experiencing today, and the fact that individual and social divisions are vanishing, or let's say getting less, and people are united to fight this pandemic. Well, with these reflections about joy and positive sides of COVID-19, we reach the end of our podcast. So thank you very much, Tess and Ghazal, for joining and for your contribution and thoughtful insights. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
For more information, visit our website, urbanpolitical.podigy.io.
Please subscribe and follow us on Twitter.